had a presentation
Okay, so we're sort of on the slippery slope to the end of the class now. With the Thanksgiving break coming up, I hope you all have safe travels and a nice break. The problem set due Friday, I'll let you handle them. So I was at Brookhaven National Lab, and I noticed this turkey checking himself out and grabbed my camera. It was pretty funny, actually. So I have gotten 5 emails giving me dates when people are interested. So this would be in order of priority of the request. I haven't heard from Railguns or Lasers, so I'd like to hear from Railguns or Lasers today if you can. And I'll go ahead and make assignments and send out an email so everybody knows. I think since the early date is December 4th, these two groups can assume they have December 4th already. And I'll use a spot. So, okay. Anything else on projects? All right, and I think Superconductivity emailed me sometime last week, and I fell way behind in my email, so sorry about that. If anybody is still here and they want to meet right after class, I can meet with you. But otherwise, we'll have to set it. Well, if you're giving your presentation on the 4th, maybe we can meet tomorrow, or good luck. I don't know. Yeah. So hopefully if there's somebody from that group, we can text signals after class. Okay. So last time, now that we have electromagnetic waves as a phenomenon in our class, we looked at a few things that come out of the solution that we are observing. And let me just emphasize something a little bit different. I mean, but I think I've said before, but I want you to be aware of it. Maxwell's equations are valid, period. They describe electromagnetic waves. And you'll recall that we ripped them apart and we imposed certain boundary conditions which gives us this nice mental model of the plane wave, which I think is the best intuition you should carry around typically about electromagnetic waves. And I think it's a completely valid thing in many instances. You are looking at waves that are from a source that's far away. But if you are looking at electromagnetic waves, say microwaves, in a metal waveguide, or if you're looking at something in very close to the source, then your intuition that you develop using the plane waves could just be flat out wrong. Maxwell's equations are still valid, but you will no longer have the same boundary conditions you did. So things like having only the transverse components of the field may not actually be true. So in a waveguide, you might also have longitudinal components and strange things. So when you are looking at a physical situation where the boundary conditions are really quite different from what we've done, you need to be very cautious about going too far with the intuition that you're getting using the plane waves. Okay. At any rate, that said, plane waves are a really good place to examine a number of things and are very valid most of the time. So one of the things we looked at was energy flow in the waves. And because energy actually flows, it has a direction, and the direction of the energy per meter squared per second, we call the pointing vector, and it goes in the direction of E cross B, so that would be the direction of energy flow. This quantity is the intensity power per meter squared, so watts per meter squared. It's what you view as the brightness. It's the thing that falls off as 1 over R squared if you are looking at a spherical wavefront.
etc.
Of course, the electromagnetic wave is oscillating. At any given instant, the energy is stored in the electric and magnetic field, and the densities look like so. If the magnitudes of E and B are oscillating very fast, instantaneously you can have no energy at that moment crossing a boundary, or you can have maximal energy depending on where you are in the phase of the oscillation. So what's typically more useful is to actually integrate over some time where the time is large compared to the oscillation time period for the waves. So, and this is, of course, what's relevant if you really want to know how much energy you can absorb due to an electromagnetic wave. So this is what you usually use. And in this case, you time average this intensity. So this basically comes out as a harmonic function squared, so you end up with this factor of 2 coming in.
So that would be the average intensity of an electromagnetic wave coming in. We looked at the momentum carried by an electromagnetic wave and radiation pressure, the pressure exerted by an electromagnetic wave. And here the mental picture that I use, although I think it may have some shortcomings, is to sort of imagine that you have a charge and to imagine that a wave can actually exert a force, thereby has momentum. If you look at the wave instantaneously, this charge will be accelerated along E. If it has a V along B, V cross B gives you a force which is going in the direction of the electromagnetic wave. So that's a way to sort of think of it in a plausible sense. Where you might be a little concerned is this wave is traveling very fast. So if you have a particle here that actually has mass, you have inertia, so you might argue that the velocity isn't much by the time the electric field flips the other direction. But I wouldn't worry about that at this point. I think the intuition, it serves you pretty well to think of this in terms of what happens when waves are reflected from surfaces and when you're worrying about momentum. So I think it's okay to go with that intuition. But we found that the momentum of the electromagnetic wave goes as the energy carried by the wave divided by C. And if the wave is absorbed, the radiation pressure is the intensity divided by C. Again, if you really want to talk about pressure, you're usually integrating over time, so that you would want to use the time average intensity divided by C. And this is if the wave is fully absorbed. If the wave is fully reflected, just like in classical mechanics, the momentum is multiplied, the pressure will be multiplied by 2. And of course, most materials are a little not perfect reflectors necessarily. So if you see a problem that talks about radiation pressure on a mirror, radiation pressure on silver, mylar, anything like that, that would be the language in the problem that's telling you that it's fully reflecting. So you just say, I'm assuming full reflection, unless they tell you otherwise. If they say it's reflected on a black surface, then that's the code word for it's fully absorbed. Okay? Any questions on all this? All right. So let me remind you the mental picture that we've been carrying around for this plane wave. So E goes as some E0 times the sine of omega t, sine of, all right, let's get a little more serious about it. Let's say this is going in the x, y, z. And so we said that E is equal to E0 times the sine of kx minus omega t, so it's propagating in the positive x direction. It might have a phase angle, we'll set it equal to zero, and it's oriented along the j direction. And when we have that, then Maxwell's equations with the boundary conditions for a plane wave, we found that we have a B field that is transverse to it, to the direction of motion. Both E and B are transverse to the direction of motion. B and E are in phase, so I know I can draw it like this. And there's a relationship between the magnitudes, etc. So that would be
an electromagnetic plane wave, a visualization of it. And again, those arrows represent what is happening in an infinite plane that is parallel to the YZ plane. Okay? So it's not a compact photon-like object. That's not what this is about. Okay. One of the things you'll notice about this particular solution is that we have chosen a direction for E to be a long J. So what I'd like to do is to look at a more general solution for an electromagnetic plane wave, something that has the potential in it for us to have the E field be in any direction. Okay? So the way in which I want to do that is I would like to describe the wave in terms of a basis set of two orthogonal E field solutions. And then the linear combination of those solutions can allow me to have the E field in any direction I want. Okay? So in this picture, and what I hope you're getting used to now, is that you're thinking E and B. Okay? What I'd like to do now is to talk about the polarization of electromagnetic waves. And to do that, I want to draw a more general solution. And in doing so, we're going to forget about B. B is always there. It always satisfies Maxwell's equations. But what I'd like to do now is to actually just think about the electric field, because the electric field defines the polarization of the wave. To do that, what I'd like to do is to look at an EM plane wave. We'll have it propagating in the x direction. But now I will not constrain E to be along J hat, for example. So I'd like to have a general solution . So to do that, I basically want to have E made up of a basis set where one of the bases has E, you know, just because I've used this color for E earlier. Oh, not that color. Has E along the direction we've been thinking. So if this is X, this is Y, this is Z. But I want to have a basis set, so I'm going to superimpose two separate solutions, one with E polarized in the XY plane, and one where E is polarized
in the YX plane. So these are now orthogonal solutions for the electric field in this wave. These are independent in principle. I could vary the phase between these orthogonal solutions, I could vary the magnitudes, and I can vary, that said, if you think of these orthogonal solutions, each of them comes with a B, and the B's from in each of these solutions are also orthogonal. And basically, you would take each of these orthogonal pieces. If you had to answer a question about B, you would use the orthogonal piece and extract what B would have to be from that piece. Yeah?
Put the Y and Z axes in this. Because it's like the same picture that I just wrote.
Oh, yeah. You're right.
Don't even know how I did that. So this is Y and this is Z. Yeah, okay. So I have drawn these two
more or less in phase, but they don't necessarily have to be less. Okay?
So we're going to have Y, Z, and X. So we are going to form this out of let's call this 1 and this 2. So for 1, let's say that the wave is plane polarized along the y-axis, which tells us that E is along the y-axis. It's oscillating, but it's along the y-axis. Generally, when we describe the polarization of waves, you are describing it from the point of view of what it would look like to you if your eyeball was sitting right here and the wave is coming at you. So if the wave is coming at you, what you would see in the case of just this piece is the electric field vector is just going straight up and down along the y-axis. Okay? It doesn't make sense to talk about it being polarized along the positive y or the negative y because it's oscillating. But it is linearly polarized because it looks like a line to you. So I want to combine that then with a second piece, which I'm going to actually have in phase and with the same magnitude for the moment. So not beautiful, but so solution 2 here has its plane or linearly polarized along the z-axis. So the orange is no longer B, the orange is E, is along the Z-axis. Okay? So now I can write the solution for these two waves. In this particular case, I'm going to let magnitude of 1 let the phase and magnitudes of the two solutions be the same. Okay. So if I say that, then I can write down that E in the Y is equal to some magnitude E0 on the Y times the cosine of kx minus omega t. I'll set the phase to 0 for simplicity, and that this is along the z hat. And that E in the z is equal to E0 in the z, but this is also equal to E0y due to what I said here. So I say it's in phase, so it's a cosine kx minus omega t the bottom one is in the z hat direction and the top one is in the y hat direction. Okay? So now what I would like you to do is to think about what your eye actually sees. Because the electric field is a vector field. So that means that what a charge would see, or what your eye in principle would see if your eye were sensitive to electric fields, if we now have to pretend that they are, okay? Or sensitive to being able to see the vectors, I guess. Your eye is sensitive to electric fields in some form, but I want to make pretend that you can actually see the vectors. So you don't see this, or charge wouldn't feel just this. The charge wouldn't feel just this. The charge feels the superposition of both, right? So the charge sees this piece and that piece vectorially added together, which gives you something off of 45 degrees. So if you think about this wave as it passes through your eye, let me imagine what's happening as time passes. Here's the eye. Let us start with t equals 0 being this part of the wave is beginning to pass through your eye. At that point, E is this way and E is that way. When you add them together, you'll have a vector that's at 45 degrees this way, right? As the wave passes through your eye, momentarily you'll have no E and B at all. So you have a vector that's this way that stays oriented at 45 degrees because these are in phase, so they have the same magnitude because I've said they do, they don't have to. So this vector stays at 45 degrees but gets shorter and shorter and shorter, okay? It's zero, and then as this piece of the wave passes through your eye, it begins to grow in this direction, again at 45 degrees, to the negative z and the negative y. So it starts going out, you know, down this way. So it grows out until it reaches a magnitude. And then as this part of it starts going through, it becomes as reduced. So as it passes in your eye, it's the big disco move that you say, right? So that would be what the electric field vector is going to be doing as it passes through your eye. Because it goes in a line, back and forth, we call it linear polarization. And you can define it. It's linearly polarized at 45 degrees to the K
counterclockwise to the positive y-axis or something. You have to be specific about it. But
now what I'd like to do is to look at the same thing. But I want to change the phase between them. So if I add pi to a cosine, I flip its algebraic sign. So now what I'll be superimposing will be something that has the cosine behavior along the y. But now it has a negative cosine behavior along the z. So here's your eyeball. And now if you can think about it, when this part of the wave is starting to pass through your eye, you have both of these vectors peak at the same time, but now one is this way, and the other is not this way like it was in the last example, but is this way, which means the E field is oriented up like that, and then as it passes through your eye, this goes to zero. As this piece goes, you begin to grow like this till it's. So now, instead of this, when they're in phase, as it's passing through your eye, if you're looking at it, it's this. Okay? So it's now linearly polarized, but by changing the phase, we've changed the direction of the linear polarization. We've rotated that angle. Okay? So up here, if we look at what your eyeball sees, you have y up this way, z that way, and x is coming out at you. And what you see is a polarization. You see the electric field vector oscillating like this, where this is 45 degrees. Here you see the same thing, except it's this way. Okay? Because the electric field line goes in a line, both of these are said to have linear polarization. So now I want to take the same thing and change the phase angle to something different. Oops. In this case, what I'd like to do is to shift it by pi over 2 instead of pi. So now if I shift it by pi over 2, I have a sine curve. So if the blue represents the one polarization, the other one now will look like a sine curve. And your bleary red eye is still here. Okay? But now, what happens is a little more complicated.
So, because one is a sine and one is a cosine, when this one is at its peak, this one is zero. So that means if we start out with this coming into your eye, the polarization is this way, instantaneous. As this comes in, this one begins to grow, this one begins to shrink, but this one is much bigger than that one, which means when you add a small vector this way to a large vector this way, you will get something that is not exactly along the axis, but a little bit this way. As this goes more, you will go to where this component, the orange, goes to zero when the blue becomes maximal, which means the vector that you see in your eye rotates up to this, up to here. So that would be when I'm at this point. As this continues to go through, you now start to grow a component this way, right? So you begin to grow, the polarization looks like that. So what happens is as this thing passes through your eye, the electric field vector rotates like this with a fixed rotation frequency. And that is what we call circular polarization. Okay? It is rotating this way, which is in the direction a clock would rotate if you were looking at a clock. So we call that right-handed circular polarization.
Instead of adding pi over 2, I subtracted pi over 2, you'll have the same kind of effect, but the rotation will be opposite. And it'll be counterclockwise, and that we call left-handed circular polarization.
If you're into chemistry, as light, if it is unpolarized or plane polarized, passes through substances, they can absorb or delay the speed of the light can depend on the orientation of the electric field vector depending on what's going through. And they can, for example, induce degrees of circular polarization even if you start out with linear polarization. You can do that. If you have something, for example, if you have a plane wave entering something and you have the medium is a little slower this way than it is that way, it'll induce a phase change, and so you can induce certain degrees of polarization. It's actually something you can use as a diagnostic in chemistry.
right, so I've got the mother of all Java applets, if I can find it for you here, for this one. Try to remember where I would have it. I didn't pull it up on the web. There. Okay. All right. Forget B. There's no B shown here. What I'm showing you is a general solution of the electromagnetic plane wave where I am plotting the electric field vector for the two orthogonal pieces of the general solution. Okay? And this is the first example we looked at, where I have the amplitudes of the two waves to be the same, and I have an in phase. And what you see is as the wave passes through the YZ plane, you can see that the electric field vector is the resultant of the two E fields. And it moves along this line. So we call it linear polarization. Pause it for a second, and let me make the phase angle to be pi. Pi in degrees is 180, right? Okay, so there we go. And now we have the second example,
where all we've done is rotate from this way to this way by making phi 180 degrees.
The third example we looked at was where phi was 90 degrees.
Is that not awesome? So now you can see the circular polarization. It's the result of heat field is rotating. Your thoughts?
Yeah, in the circle really mostly, or is that two different ways? Like, I can see how the other linear one is one.
We are mathematically describing it as two different ways to compose, but so the charge doesn't see that. The charge sees the superposition of those two. So this is a single solution. It is a single wave. You've written in a form, and it has this circular colors. Well, to get the gist of this, you can decompose it into two ways. So. I mean, that's how we mathematically can understand this. Did you have a question?
So, based on this, you can just alter the amplitude of one of the directions and get like an elliptical pattern.
Yeah.
Is that a really used pattern thing?
Oh yeah. Yep.
I mean, you think it's a general solution. So you can get this to do anything. So that's where the fun starts. All right. So in order to really get a handle on this, it's sort of fun, I added in that, which allows you to sort of see the path that the tip of the vector follows, okay? And it fades a little so that you don't overwrite. All right. And now, what was that? You wanted to change the amplitude. So let us increase the amplitude of A.
Yeah.
Now you have an elliptical polarization. So circular polarization is just a special case of elliptical polarization. And you can do that to an extreme if you want. You can rotate the ellipse by changing the phase angle. You can make it rotate the other direction by changing the phase angle. Is this not the coolest Java applet of all time? If you can honestly not sit down and play with this for a good hour, I don't know why you're in this class. I didn't write the code. I designed it, and I just sat there. I mean, every time I do this, I could just sit and play with it for an hour. I think it's just completely cool. So it's pretty popular, pretty powerful, I think. I don't know, you can change the speed of light if you want. Try that in reality. Yeah, so at any rate, very cool Java applet. So that is polarization. So, you might wonder why you would care very much about polarization besides the ability to have a very cool job. And among the reasons, I guess, is that in the physical world, different directions mean something. So imagine that I have an electromagnetic plane wave that is bouncing off a mud puddle and then coming to your eye. When it bounces off a mud puddle, the light is hitting an interface with a different substance. And as you've seen, when things hit substances or encounter boundary conditions with substances, E and B can vary, right? And if you think about the electromagnetic plane wave coming in and hitting the substance, this direction is along the boundary of the substance of the air and the water, or whatever. Okay? This one is different. It's trying to penetrate into the substance rather than just along the surface. Those things are different. So what happens if you look at what parts of the wave get transmitted and what parts get reflected, you'll find an asymmetry that is completely dependent on the polarization. And in fact, as it turns out with electromagnetic, if I have a completely unpolarized plane wave that bounces off a mud puddle, what comes out is plane polarized because only one of these orientations actually gets reflected. So, if you are driving and things are bright outside, so things are reflecting off of mud puddles or reflecting off of other people's car windows, that light is plane polarized. And in fact, the plane of the polarization I think is this way, actually. So, if you take Polaroid material which has an orientation that allows light through that it's at right angles to that, then what will happen is it allows light through from everything, but it will cut out the light that's plane polarized this way, which means it basically cuts the glare to nothing, which is why Polaroid sunglasses are so great, because they'll cut the intensity of the non-polarized wave by a factor of two just by cutting out that one direction, But in addition to that, they will be preferentially cutting out the things that are reflective. If you are driving along and you're truly bored and there's not a lot of traffic around you and there's a lot of glare on the road, try doing this. And when you do this, you'll find you'll get a lot more glare. Or you can take them off and do this, whichever suits you. I don't recommend you do it with two hands if you're driving. But now just stop yourself. You're going to be in a car someday in the near future. And your friend who's driving is going to look at you like you've lost your mark and say, "What in the hell are you doing with your sunglasses?" Because you're going to be there. That's totally cool. Can I see your sunglasses? Because if you have two of them, then it's completely cool because you've got the two Polaroid lenses, so you can now do it. Yeah, you can cut it out, you can play.
Oh, it's while you're doing this, the car's slipping.
No, that's why you do it when your friend is driving. So it's okay if they think you're weird, you just don't want them to see it. Well, if you're too weird, then you run the risk of a car wreck. So you might want to do this surreptitiously. Or warn them, don't look over here. I'm changing my underwear or something, you know, don't look. Okay. I will, this applet is already posted on the class website, so you should play with it at will. I think, you know, if you want to impress grandma over Thanksgiving break, this will do it. You know, it's sort of funny. I make jokes like that all the time. One of the greatest emails I got from an ex-student.
I just had them laughing for days.
I'm still laughing about it. There's this mechanics thing.
It's a problem that I had actually forgotten we did in Physics 113, but the student said we did, so okay, I guess we did. I'll just tell you the story, okay? So this kid is in a car with his mom, and his mom gets the car in a ditch on a snowy day. And it's really stuck, and so he's out pushing, and they can't get it to go anywhere. And so they had to be somewhere. Mom was a bit upset, and so he took the rope and he tied it to the front of the car, tied it to a tree over here, and then his mom had no idea what he was doing because he started pushing sideways on the rope, and. If you do the mechanics problem, if you apply a force this way, of course you have a bigger tension than you do if you just try pulling on the rope. And so the car popped right out of the ditch. And apparently I could have them work this problem. And he said, his mom was so impressed that the conversation at the dinner table was, "Wow, it's really great to know we're not wasting our money." I don't know. So the vast majority of what I say, in some ways, I'm sure you can interpret as a complete waste of money. Within it are some nuggets that they actually like I say, though, be careful with the sunglasses. You might explain it to them before you try doing that. Anyway. So the stuff is not completely useless. Actually, it's not useless at all. Electromagnetism. So
tell me something in your life that doesn't involve electromagnetism. If you fall down the stairs, that's crap. All right, so that doesn't involve electromagnetism. Anything chemistry is electromagnetism plus polymer, right? That's all it is. Light, anything using light, anything in your electronics, it's all electromagnetic. So we live in an electromagnetic society. But there was a day where we had no idea about how electromagnetism worked. So if you were Faraday's neighbor, think about what the neighbors would say. He's a complete fruitcake. He's down in his basement playing with these little things all the time. Of what use is that? There's a fabulous quote, which I'm not going to get right because I didn't think to say it. I'd say it when I before class. I can't even remember whether it was Hertz or Mark Twain. One of them was demonstrating the fact that you could that you have electromagnetic waves by basically having a coil. You've done it, right? Where you take a coil, you change the current, and you get a reading of so you're creating a radiator. And they were asked what earthly use that was, and it was really funny because I forget which one it was, whether it was Maxwell or Marconi or one of these guys, and their answer was something to the effect of, it might be entertaining at circuses or something like that. I mean, they had no idea what they had really taught about the tale at that point. And so that is my standard example when people start busting on fundamental research and playing with science in ways where there's no immediate application that can be seen. You need to give it time. But there was a day when we didn't understand electromagnetism, but because people played with this stuff and eventually understood it, we now live in a society which is completely dominated by electromagnetic phenomena and our understanding. That said, it's really hard to imagine that the Higgs field or the neutrinos will actually help us make better bread someday or whatever, so I don't know. We may have gotten ourselves into regimes of scale that are so remote from our experience that it will never actually affect us directly, but who knows? You know, it might be really cool to show up in 100 years and see what people have figured out to do with some of the cutting edge stuff that people are understanding now. Sorry, that was a bit of a soapbox, I guess. Okay. So let us imagine that I have our canonical eyeball is sitting here. And we have an electromagnetic plane wave coming at us. And let us say that this plane wave has instantaneously, it's linearly polarized, and it has an electric field vector, which is this way. So let's say that this is just a measure of one instant where I have a maximal electric field, but it's some linear polarization along that line. And we'll say that this is at some angle theta with respect to the y-axis. This forms a right angle, sort of a triangle. And let us imagine that we now have our glasses and we demand that we're only sensitive to the electric field vector that's polarized along the y-axis. So we do a polarization analysis of this thing, and we can only see the Y component. That's going to be E0 times the cosine of theta. So if we think of what's happened, the intensity. Remember, the intensity goes as the field squared, right? So what we've done by using a linear polarizer on this thing is we have reduced the intensity, we've reduced the electric field from E0 to E0 squared, to E0 cosine theta. But intensity goes as the square of the field. So the new intensity goes as E0 squared times cosine squared theta. So this is equal to the initial intensity times cosine squared theta. Okay?
If you integrate over all angles, so if it's hard to draw these things, so imagine that we have a line of propagation for the wave, and we'll say that we have initially an unpolarized wave. So you have to imagine that all of these orientations are actually perpendicular to the direction of propagation, which is that way, even though it doesn't quite look that way. But basically, an unpolarized wave means that instantaneously, the wave always has a polarization, because if you freeze it, you see an electric field, right, in some direction. But if you say that it's an unpolarized wave, a way to think about it is this superposition where this polarization is just random. So you can think of it as a superposition of an infinite number of plain polarized waves where that polarization is just all over the place. So then I put it through what I call a plain polarizer. So in a plane polarizer, when I draw it this way, a way to think about it is that this will allow only the components of the wave which are parallel to the direction that I choose here, the plane. So in this case, it will allow through only that polarization. And when you take a completely unpolarized wave and you plane polarize and you integrate what's happening in the theta, you end up with a factor of a half. So the intensity is equal to 1/2 times I0. So if this has an intensity of I0, a plane polarized wave, which started out with no polarization, now has an intensity of a half of what you initially had. Okay? So now what I'd like to do is I want to send initially unpolarized light through two linear polarizers. Where these polarizers are at angle theta with respect to one another, that is the linear polarization they let through, you have one rotated by an angle theta with respect to the other. A little bit hard to draw, again, sorry. So there is the direction of propagation of the wave. We have an initially unpolarized wave which has an intensity of I0. I'll pass it through one polarizer, which I'll say is oriented like so. So when that happens, I know it will let through only light with that polarization, which I'll say has intensity I1. And then I will allow that to pass through a polarizer which is at some angle theta. So it's a little hard to draw. So the polarizers are perpendicular to the plane of propagation. And I take one and I rotate it by an angle theta. Okay. So then the question is, what is the final intensity relative to the initial intensity? So I1 is going to be equal to 1/2 I0, because you're taking an unpolarized wave and putting it through a linear polarizer. And then I2, as we've seen, if you do this at an angle, the intensity goes as the intensity that's incoming times the cosine squared of the angle. So this is equal to I1 times the cosine squared of theta, which is 1/2 times I0 times the cosine squared of theta.
Okay? If they are at 90 degrees, no intensity comes through.
So in fact, that's what I want to do. I want to make this one so if I do that, then I will get I2 equal to 0, right? But let's do it a little bit differently. Let us now insert something which is in an angle where theta is less than 90 degrees. If I do that, then I'll get an I2 here, and I'll get an I3 going through. But notice what happens.
Here I plane polarize it. I'm all up and down. I'm now at 90 degrees polarization. It cuts it out completely. The theta is that next rotation relative to the first, and that is 90 degrees. Here, I do the same thing in the initial step. I cut the intensity by a factor of 2. Now I have a polarization where theta is not 90 degrees. So intensity will come through, and it will come through times cosine squared of theta, the intensity change. This piece now has a non-zero component along the 90 degree line. So I will now allow through light, which has an intensity, which will be this intensity, which is the 1/2 I0 times the cosine squared of that angle. I now will let through an intensity, which is I2 intensity times the cosine square of this theta, 90 minus that theta. Right. So there's a non-zero piece that comes through. So that's what we saw in the demo last time, where I had the two orthogonal pieces of Polaroid. Couldn't see anything. And I insert something at an angle to it, and you now let light through, which always seems a little bit weird. Any questions on polarization? That's all I'm going to do with this. Okay, so the next thing I wanted to do is to look at the interaction of electromagnetic waves with materials and derive, or at least motivate, the basic laws of optics. And then we'll actually do geometric optics, because I think you haven't done that in your 140s. So we'll do basic geometric optics.
I remember it was our first lab at 143.
Okay, that's good. I mean, you're going to certainly find some of them certainly simple, but you have to see it. So, any questions? So rather than get started on that, I think it's just a good place to stop. So, yes, question?
How does that community do the polarized, filter chain polarization of the way that you really tend to filter that stuff today? Is it a preparation
branch? So how does it change the polarization of light? If you have a material that has, so as we're about to see, we define different materials will have different epsilons and mu's. So, and we found that the speed of propagation of a wave depends on epsilon and mu. So the speed of a wave depends on the index of refraction, which is defined as basically the speed of light in the medium versus the speed of light in the vacuum over the speed of light in the medium. Some materials will have an asymmetric index of refraction. So something that has a polarization this way will actually go faster than something that way. So that can induce a phase difference, which can cause circular to go linear or something like that. You can have materials that either preferentially reflect, so you can imagine having a conductor that is along this line, okay? Then what happens is when the wave hits the conductor, the electric field vector that wiggles electrons sort of along the conductor gets perfectly reflected, can't penetrate. The electric field lines that go this way sort of can't, the way to think about it is they can't wiggle the electron enough to basically cause a reflection going back, so those penetrate. So you can have a substance made up of something that basically preferentially reflects one of the polarizations, or you can have a substance that is made up of materials that will preferentially absorb a polarization and not the other. So there's different ways of doing it. If you've ever used a quarter wave plate in optics, it's something that will induce, it will change linear polarization to circular, or circular to linear by shifting the phase of one orientation versus the other by a quarter wave, which is what the plate does. Did that answer your question, sort of?
But then how does that explain when you have three and you rotate?
Well, if I have something that's like this that gives me that polarization, okay, if I now have something that's like that, basically I can take this polarization and think of it as a decomposition of a wave like this and a wave like that. This piece doesn't get through, this piece does. So at a price of cut in intensity, I effectively am letting through this polarization of light. They will all become clear in the next problem set. Okay, have a great Thanksgiving. Travel safely, everybody. And lasers and
rail guns need to tell me when they want to present.
I think rail guns just sent an email.
Rail guns just sent me an email.
Just sent me the email? Okay, good.
All right.
Yeah, so send me the emails and I will set the schedule up right away.
So earlier on one of the slides, you said that when it's spinning around, that one was right-handed. Which direction are you viewing it from? Because you're viewing it from this direction.
Focus on my eyeball. Okay, so let me see. This was the first one. So if this is my eyeball, as this wave is coming through, initially it's... Oh, this is not circular. This is slowly...
Yeah. this is actually going counterclockwise.
I have the right here, and then as this passes, okay, so let me start out. I'm going, if my arm is this way, it's a long orange. As this goes, the orange gets reduced and the blue begins to grow, which means it's starting to lose the
pistol.
Okay. As it continues through, I have all blue and no orange. Remember, the wave is passing through this one. As it continues on, there comes a point where I have all orange that way and zero blue, and then I have all blue. So it is rotating like this.
But at the beginning here, the blue starts off up here.
But the wave is going this way. So if the blue is all up, there's zero this, the next thing that happens is blue gets reduced and the orange starts rolling that way as it passes through your eye. This whole shape is moving this way.
So at this point, the porridge is up, is up here.
Yep.
And at this next point, the orange comes out.
The wave time dependence has this entire that's what it means by turning into your
eye. Oh, okay.
So you visualize what happens as the shape passes into your eye this way.
Oh, okay. All right. Got it. Thanks.
Yeah.
Hi. Hi. We're laser.
Okay. The email works because we went over it. So if you tell me now, I'll vaguely remember we had some discussion and I don't remember which day it was. I can try to write it down here. So what was it?
I'm thinking 11, 9, and 4.
Okay. 11, 9.
Do you want to push it, push the date?
Okay.
Thank you.
Can I just leave it at the 4th? And if we can, then...
Can we then push it off?
I don't think we need to. I think that we have enough. Because next week, after Thanksgiving, we have 4 days. And I do not want to dedicate more than 4 days.
Okay.
So, however, I think that in order to get it done for Tuesday or Thursday, then people over the break, they would have to do something.
Sure.
I will do something because I have time. Because I don't want to do it late. Mainly.
Things will become more complicated. So many things after Thanksgiving.
Actually, after Thanksgiving, I'm done. I'm with everything.
I'm sorry.
You're out of time?
I'll fly back. I mean, I'm going fine. Again, do the same thing. Just send me a couple of time slots that work for you. Wednesday, I'm pretty sure I have a meeting that I think starts at 3:30. I can't do off my calendar at 1, so probably noon is better, but there are windows in the afternoon. Okay.
Hi, Professor. We're the group of superconductor.
Okay.
So, we can go to your office hour and talk about our plan. Is it just going to be like a...
Can you meet right now?
Yeah, sure.
Let's just do that.
Yeah, okay.
I'll meet you in my office in just a few minutes.
Okay, cool.
So let's do that.
Okay.
So let's simply, because I have my... I'm going out of town to visit a sister for Thanksgiving, so my kids are actually coming over today for Thanksgiving. So.
Yeah, sure.